This is a special program on Multicultural 1600 AM, so please stay tuned.
Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community. Listen Wednesdays from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
Welcome, everyone, to the Portuguese American Hour. I'm Dinis Borges. It's so nice to be with you once again for another exciting hour of entertainment here on KGST, Multicultural 1600. The Portuguese American Hour is a product of the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at the California State University, Fresno, Fresno State. And today I am here with Esmeralda because Justice decided not to be with us today, but he will be here with us next week. My co-host for this hour every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. live. And then, of course, we have it on podcast, live stream, and all the other media outlets. We'll get directly to our first guest. We have a guest on the line all the way from the East Coast of the United States of America. And her name is Marie Fraley. Marie is a director of the Portuguese American Leadership Council of the United States, known as PALCAS, a national organization that has been doing great work for the Portuguese American community throughout the U.S. And now she is heading a very special program of PALCAS, which is called MPC, Make Portuguese Count, part of the census for 2020 coming up really soon. So, Marie, I think we're on the line. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Hi, how are you?
I am doing fantastically well. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us. And let's dive right into Make Portuguese Count. You are the national director. You have been doing great work building up a strong coalition of people from all walks of life and with lots of information being disseminated. So talk a little bit, if you don't mind, first of all, how this came about, how Make Portuguese Count and this whole campaign appeared through PALCAS.
Well, thanks very much for having me, Dinis. It's a pleasure to be able to tell everybody about this very important campaign for the Portuguese American community. There is some background about this campaign. PALCAS has been talking to the U.S. Census Bureau for over 10 years. When we realized that there was no ancestry question in the last decennial census, mm-hmm. which means every 10 years, in 2010. There was some concern because the only way Portuguese would be counted is if people checked off some other race and wrote in Portuguese. And that didn't seem that it was going to be very effective, and in fact, it was not. So as we were working and talking with the U.S. Census Bureau, and it was early as 2013, their working group for ethnicity and Hispanic and ethnic issues, we had some concern about whether or not Portuguese were going to be considered Hispanic on the census, in the census of 2010. PALCAS did a survey, and the results of that survey was 83% of the people who responded said they would not identify themselves as Hispanic and would not indicate that on a U.S. Census form. So we reported that to the U.S. Census Bureau. They included it in their report. And from that seems to have arisen the question that we will have this time in 2020. And that question is about race. But on that question, you will now be able to check off any race that applies to you. Some people are more than one race. Some people are biracial or multiracial. But under the race that you check off, you will now be able to write your origin. And by that, they mean ancestry. And for me, that means that I will check off white and I will write Portuguese. And that is the only way that we will be counted, because otherwise we don't have our own question, we don't have our own box. So everyone needs to know to be sure to write in Portuguese.
Okay, so Marie, under the category of race, so if one is African-American and has a Portuguese grandmother, grandfather, or Portuguese relative, so you could put African-American, and then under the ancestry, you can put Portuguese and any other ethnicity that you have in your background, correct?
That's exactly right.
Okay, and it will be counted as Portuguese, not just as African-American in this case.
That's exactly right. And the reason that I can say this with such confidence is that I personally met with some members of our Complete Count Committee with the Chief of Ethnicity and Ancestry from the headquarters of the U.S. Census Bureau.
Mm-hmm.
So this is right from the top. And when we left that meeting, they said to us, tell people to check off all races that apply to them and write in all ancestries that apply to them up to six.
And so up to six. So, and is this the first time? I don't know if it's the first time, but it's kind of interesting. I don't remember on the census having that option of doing four, five, six ancestry information. Is that something that's kind of new from your perspective? What have you found out about that?
Well, I think that this time the way they've structured the question and mm-hmm. the way to answer it is new.
Mm-hmm.
When I look back at the 2000 census, there was an ancestry question. Now, it was only on the long form. Remember, they used to do long forms and short forms.
Correct.
The ancestry question was only on the long form. And there was an opportunity to check off up to three ancestries. But I believe it was your primary, your secondary, and then your tertiary or your third. And I think that's the way they calculated it at the time.
Okay.
But this particular, the way this is set up this time and structured this time, it is different. I don't think they've done it this way before.
How are you, as national director for this very important campaign, Make Portuguese Count, for this very important project? How do you foresee us getting to folks all over the country? It's a huge country, and we have these traditional Portuguese enclaves, such as, certain cities in California, certain cities back east. But how do we reach these people to everyone that we can to make this aware of this unique opportunity?
Well, the way I've envisioned this, and this is just what seemed to make the most sense. We have a database of 650 organizations and groups that are social clubs, but also civic groups, churches, schools in the United States, put mm-hmm. together between what we had and also the embassy shared with us as well. And we are trying to reach out to them. But you need boots on the ground. You need soldiers. And actually, we're calling these folks captains. And these are community leaders in their own communities. They know the people in their community, and their people know them. And they are the trusted voices. And they are the ones who are reaching out to these groups and talking to them and getting permission to speak to the membership of these groups by asking them to register with us. And we call it affiliated organizations.
Mm-hmm.
But it gives us, gives us a little information about them. But they're going to their meetings and their fastes and their events. They're distributing brochures and flyers. They're handing out, campaign buttons. I've gone through 15,000 campaign buttons. And we're all over the country. There are 62 of us now, from Hawaii to Massachusetts, down to Texas and Florida, and I just got to an Oregon. That's a father and son team, and I'm so excited.
Fantastic. Yes, there are. There is a Portuguese community throughout the state of Oregon. Let me play a little bit to paraphrase you in some of our meetings, as a devil's advocate. Why would you know, what the average person, any person listening to this Portuguese American Hour, who's of Portuguese background, and they would say, why is it important that I identify as Portuguese? I'm American. I was born here. My parents were born here. Maybe my grandmother or my great-grandmother were the ones that immigrated. Why, in your perspective, is that important for people to be counted as Portuguese?
Well, I mean, that's my situation. I was born here. My parents were born here. My grandparents were the ones who came over from San Miguel in the belly of the boat, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it is important because, number one, it's important to participate in the census because the $675 billion that will be distributed to communities, towns, and cities for their schools and roads and bridges and fire and police, those all are determined by the population, by the census.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where Portuguese people live. But when it comes down to actually writing Portuguese under your origin, under the race question, we have not had a complete count in over 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know for sure how many we are and where we are. And if we want to apply for grants, if we want to do health studies about the Portuguese, if we want to argue in front of a school committee for a Portuguese language program in our own town or our own city, or if we want to know, you know, in front of an elected official, you know, what they're going to do for us, the first question is always, well, how many are there of Portuguese in my district?
Correct.
You need to have that data in order to make the case, in order to prove our strength in numbers. And then when we tell elected officials that we vote at a rate 20% higher than the national average, and the majority of us, our citizens, they literally will take out their pen and start taking notes. So it is a powerful thing to have this information. It's not that the government wants it. It's because we want it, and we need to use it when we are talking about the programs that we want for our community.
As makes Portuguese counts, and not just for the listeners that we have here in Central California throughout the Valley, which is a very, very large Portuguese-American community and a very old community. We've had immigrations here since the mid to late 1800s, but also those who are listening or will listen later on the live stream or on the podcast. What if one is interested as a community leader to become a captain, to become more involved? What kind of steps should he or she take?
They just need to contact me directly.
Okay.
I will be happy to talk to them. They can send an email at PALCIS, you know, PALCIS at PALCIS.org,
mm-hmm.
or they can call the office, which is 202-466-4664, and Gracie will take their message and send it along to me. But yes, even though we have, you know, 14 captains in California, we could use a whole lot more. California is a big state. There are many places where we could still use captains. If you're willing to help, please let us know. I will talk to you personally and set you up with the materials and all the information that you need. I'd also encourage people to go to our website, the PALCIS website, which is palcis.org/makePortugueseCount.
Lastly, Marie, as some last words for our listeners, those who may not be interested in being captains, but who certainly should be counted, any last words that you'd like to share with everybody, as I thank you again for taking time from your busy schedule to be with us and to talk about this very important, I feel, very, very important project for PALCIS Make Portuguese Count. I think it's getting lots of attention thanks to your hard work, and it's getting lots of attention also in Portugal, and that's good to see that the entities in Portugal, the Azores, Madeira, are really interested in this project that you're hitting up. So any last words are yours. Thank you again so much for being part of the show.
Well, thank you for having me. And again, I would say to everybody, don't be afraid. Please realize that your information is completely private. Nobody can get it. but also that this is self-identification. When you write Portuguese, it's because this is the culture you identify with. You don't. It's not about your DNA. It's not about, you know, your passport or where you were born. It's completely the self-identification that you have with your own culture and others that may be in your background as well. So please do it.
And Marie, one last thing, since I have you online, and when does the census begin? It begins in the early part of next year, correct?
Well, yes. People will find that in the middle of March, right around March 12th, they will receive a letter in the U.S. mail inviting them to participate first online. It will give them an opportunity to log on and put in a code number that is for their household only.
Mm-hmm.
That is your first option to be able to respond. But if you don't do it that way, you will get a paper form in the mail that you can fill out and send back. But it's a very short form. It's not very long. It should only take you 10 to 15 minutes, whether it's online or whether you do it on the paper. If you don't do it that way, someone will come knocking on your door. A census taker will come.
Right.
So please try to do it online in the middle of March when you first see it.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Marie. And hopefully, if not before, for sure, I know you'll be very busy, but for sure, around March, April, we should have another conversation, if you're willing.
Oh, I'm always willing, Denise,
okay.
to talk to you.
Thank you so much, Marie. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Have a good evening. And that was Marie Freilich, who is the National Director for the Make Portuguese Count, a census project for 2020 from PALCAS, the Portuguese American Leadership Council of the United States. We will be talking more about this, how important it is for all communities and certainly for the Portuguese American community throughout the valley and throughout the state. Again, thank you, Marie, for your time. And we will be right back with our moment in Portuguese history.
Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community. Listen Wednesdays from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
And our moment in Portuguese history is a moment that we are going to deviate a little bit from the kings and the queens and all the famous people and talk a little bit about a tradition that is very Portuguese and very Iberia Peninsula, which is in November 1st. November 1st, Portugal does not celebrate Halloween. I shouldn't say they don't celebrate. Everybody celebrates Halloween now because it's a good party. But years ago, the Portuguese did not celebrate Halloween. We celebrated something on November 1st called Pão por Deus, or Bread for God. It's a Portuguese tradition, and since the 2nd century, Christians have prayed for their dead loved ones by visiting their tombs, and it was during the 5th century that the church put in place in the calendar to allocate one day per year for each saint, or in honor of the saints, and then of course, November 1st was All Saints Day, and then November 2nd became All Souls Day. The Portuguese started something on November 1st called Pão por Deus. It's a time-honored tradition, reminiscent of Halloween, but does not, however, have the supernatural connotations nor the same origins. In villages throughout Portugal, on the morning of November 1st, the children would gather together and then go from house to house, reciting some simple poems, some simple rhymes, and asking for Pão por Deus, or Bread for God. And they would say something like, Pão por Deus, a mangarola, enche-me o saco, ou e vou-me embora. Something like, Bread for God, fill my bag, and I'll be on my way. In exchange, the villagers would put bread, cakes, some fruits sometimes, dried fruits, sometimes sweet treats, and these would have been recently, in their bag. And the children, of course, would leave and go to the next house. And that it has a similarity of Halloween. If someone did not give something, they would say something like, Gurgulho, gurgulhote, lhe dê no pote e não lhe deixe farelo nem farelote. Something like, may your rice rot and may you lack bran in your pot. In other words, nothing good to come to you because you didn't give me anything. In some villages, the villagers would offer some other kinds of cakes, and it has been part of the Portuguese history for a very, very long time. It may have died out in certain parts of Portugal. It continues much in the Azores still today. And it also continues in some rural villages and some other areas in Lisbon and Porto and some of the other major cities. So November 1st in Portuguese, our moment in Portuguese history is Pão por Deus, or Bread for God. We'll be right back with more exciting Portuguese American Hour.
Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community. Listen Wednesdays from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM. Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community. Listen Wednesdays from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
And here we are back at the Portuguese American Hour. It is a product of the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at the California State University, Fresno. And we have our second guest. Our second guest is here local after being on the phone with someone from the East Coast of the United States of America and the Portuguese American community at a national level. We're back at a local and also regional level with Manuel Correia Jr. Manuel is the president of the Filarmónica Portuguesa de Tular, or that is the Tulare Portuguese Philharmonic Band. The band is organizing an annual event, which is the California Portuguese Marching Band Festival, the Festival, and this year it is in Tulare after many years, and it will be coming up pretty soon on the 8th and 9th of November. The actual festival is all day on the 9th. Manuel, welcome.
Hello, how's it going?
How are you doing? Busy.
I'm good. How are you?
Are you going to survive this band festival?
Yeah, I think we're going to make it through just fine. I got a good team around me, and we're all chugging along.
Good. I know you've been working hard for the last few months, especially. It's been a long process, and it's coming up real quick. First of all, Manuel, I should say that Manuel is probably one of the youngest, if not the youngest, band presidents of a Portuguese marching band throughout the state of California. So congratulations to that. And let's before we dive into the band festival, we have lots of folks listening who aren't of Portuguese background, and lots who are of Portuguese background, but don't participate in lots of things in the community. So tell us a little bit about the marching band. What is the Tulare Portuguese Marching Band, or the Filarmónica Portuguesa in Tulare?
We are an organization of musicians, not all Portuguese, not of all the same background, and we jump around the state, festa to festa, and we just play music. It's something we all kind of enjoy doing.
So
what brought us all together, and how we got here.
So the band has rehearsals every week, more or less, right?
Yes, every Wednesday, 7:30 to 9:30. 7:30, of course, is the Portuguese start time, so it's closer to 8:30 sometimes, depending. But we practice every week.
And every, especially throughout the summer, just about every Sunday, you're participating somewhere in a parade, and then sometimes even a concert. Correct?
Correct. May, June, or it's pretty much every weekend. July used to be something every weekend, but the last couple of years kind of died out, and then we pushed through again through August with pretty much every weekend on the road, and then it's kind of here and there from August all the way till November.
So does the band take a break? I think that you have your Christmas event around the first week of December. Is there a little bit of a break after that?
Yeah, typically we take a break for Carnival. It's a couple of months, and then the week after Carnival is when we hop right back into it. So it's a 2.5 month, maybe 3 month break, but besides that, we're all there.
Okay. So the band also has its anniversary every year, which is a big festival, and hopefully we'll talk about it on the Portuguese American Hour when the summertime comes, which is in August. But the event now coming up in November the 9th, all day. Talk a little bit about what's going to happen. Is there something on the 8th, or is it only on the 9th, Emmanuel?
The 8th is just a little... it's a dance with DJ Tony Noon.
Mm-hmm.
There's a theme for that night. It's Kentucky Derby. So you come dressed as your typical Kentucky Derby goer. And then you just, that night is just meant for everybody to come, hang out, you know, meet new people, have a few drinks, and just kind of relax.
Okay.
And then Saturday is when it's all business for the most part. Saturday starts pretty early. Presidents and Mesh have a little meeting about 8 o'clock in the morning, and we decide concert orders for the day. We go through some, you know, what's going on, who wants to host festival in next year or 2 years out, and then from that point on, we do a little despiel. After the despiel, there's some speeches. We play all the anthems, and then after the anthems, it starts lunch and concert.
Okay. And so throughout the day, throughout the late morning and most of the afternoon, there's different concerts. How many bands are participating this year, Manuel?
This year, 13 out of 14.
Okay. So 13 bands coming from all over California, right?
Yes, sir.
And the concerts that they play, how many songs do they usually play? I'm sure, you know, these are not hour-long concerts, or else it'll take forever, correct?
Correct. When this event kind of started, they kind of set up some rough guidelines, and that kind of it ended up just sticking. It's pretty much during the despiel, you have your one march, and then concert pieces. You have three concert pieces on, you know, however long. You can't go over, you know, I think it's like 10 minutes, and then after you play your three songs, then it's your ing, and then that's it.
Okay.
And then on to the next group. So it's roughly, I mean, two concerts go on at the same time, back and forth. One band plays a song, and then another band plays a song. So each group takes about an hour, but it's two bands, not just one.
Right. And so if anyone, those folks who are listening to us all over the valley, on the 9th is a Saturday, so it's actually in a couple of weeks, 2 weeks, or a week from this coming Saturday. If folks want to attend, is there a cost to attend?
To attend, no.
So free of charge, but there's going to be some food available. That's always a fun part about going to Portuguese American events, is you can sample some food, right?
Of course, there will be. Starting at 8 in the morning, we're going to start with Dios. And then during lunchtime, it's Solfege. And then we will have a restaurant open throughout the day selling bifa portuguesa, linguiça sandwiches, and a couple other things.
Okay, so there will be pretty much a full kind of restaurant throughout the day if people want to try some of the different Portuguese foods. But just to go in and listen, it's free of charge.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so anyone throughout the valley, and people can come and go as they please, obviously. The opening ceremonies with all the bands, they usually do a big parade, correct?
Correct. each band gets their time to shine and march in
mm-hmm.
and play something that they've been practicing and playing all year.
And then is there like the anthems are played together still? That's, the if I recall correctly, last time the Portuguese and the United States Star Spangled Banner kind of played together with all the different bands, correct?
Correct. All 13 bands will play Portuguese, American, and Azorean anthem together.
That's is that challenging, Manuel, or no?
Sometimes. I'm not a musical professional, but sometimes it can be pretty difficult.
Right.
But I think this year we've come up with a system, and we think it's gonna work out, and we're gonna try it out.
Good. Okay, well, I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us. And again, if folks want to join, that's the band festival. Again, where is it at? We did not mention that. Can you talk that a little bit to everyone, please?
Yes, it's at the TDS Hall in Tulare at 515 North I Street.
Okay. So it's at the TDS Hall, starting at basically the festival itself. I know you guys have meetings and different things like that, but the festival itself, as far as the public is concerned, anyone can go starting at about 9 o'clock, correct?
Correct.
And then after all the concerts end, is there an evening program, or that's once the last concert is done, that's it?
After the last concert, there will be a dance with a band from Epsilon. A conjunto from Epsilon called Sem Dúvida. They've come to Tulare a couple times, several times throughout the last couple of years, and they've been a really good time, and they're a great group of guys to hang out with.
And so this dance is also open to the public?
Correct.
Okay.
And there will be a bar and drinks, and the restaurant will still be open.
Okay, so if folks folks are working on Saturday the 9th and they don't have time to go to the band concert throughout the day, the different concerts, they can surely attend a fun event at night and grab some good Portuguese meals, and at the same time help out the Tulare Portuguese Marching Band. Well, Manuel, thank you so much for taking the time to visit with us, and best of luck. I'm sure it'll be a great success. All roads will lead to Tulare on November the 9th.
Thank you very much. I appreciate
thank you.
That.
Thank you. Thank you, Manuel. And that was Manuel Correa Jr. He is the president, a young man who attended Fresno State and who is the president of the Tulare Portuguese Philharmonic Band, or Filarmónica Portuguesa de Tular, that is organizing the annual California Portuguese Marching Band Festival. It's something that goes on every year, has been going on for quite a few years now. And it is always in a different city, as Manuel mentioned, and this time it will be here in the Central Valley in the city of Tulare, and that's all day on Saturday the 9th, open to the public, free of charge. The only thing obviously is if folks want to eat or drink something. And as he mentioned, for those of you who like the filoge, which is a Portuguese donut, those of you of Portuguese background may have heard of the word before. If you are not of Portuguese background, it's also popularly known as the Portuguese donut, and they will be selling those in the morning. So it's a good thing to, if you're in the Tulare area, to get there early and to have a cup of coffee with the filoge and taste these most awesome Portuguese donuts. At the band festival will be, of course, homemade. So they will be very, very yummy. Again, that's the Tulare Portuguese Philharmonic Band president, Manuel Correa Jr. Thanks so much, Mango, for joining us, and we're inviting once again everyone on the 9th to the city of Tulare for this most awesome event. And we'll be right back with our book of the week.
Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community. Listen Wednesdays from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
And our book of the week is by a famous Portuguese writer by the name of Miguel Torga. He was a very prolific writer, has unfortunately died. He's known for his poetry, but he's also known for his prose. And translated to English is a most awesome book called Tales and More Tales from the Mountain. And Miguel Torque was born to a peasant family on the flanks of the mountain in Portugal, a remote and austere Trás-os-Montes area. He spent his childhood there and returned as a young doctor. His tales, however, do not portray some remembered Eden, but the world man entered when he quits that servile welfare state. So it is a very thought-provoking book. It's a collection of stories. If one wants to get to know particularly Portugal of a bygone era, especially during the Salazar regime when we had a dictatorship in Portugal, and even before that, his stories are remarkable. They have a very, very vivid imagination and a very poetic prose as that. So I would encourage everyone who wants to know a little bit more about Portugal, Portuguese literature, Portuguese culture in general, to pick up a book by Miguel Torga, Tales and More Tales from the Mountain, which has been translated to English. The book, of course, was written in Portuguese by Miguel Torga, but it was translated to English by Ivana Rangel Carlson, and there are several different editions out there. It's certainly a book that I would recommend to everyone, again, who is of Portuguese background, but who is not also of Portuguese background and wants to read some really good literature. Miguel Torga, Tales and More Tales from the Mountain is our book of the week, as every week we try to talk about a different book here on the Portuguese American Hour. I encourage you to pick it up wherever you buy your books, either online or at a physical bookstore. In a little bit, we will take another break, and then we will come back. We'll come back to some more guests and some more information. We will have our recipe of the week with a gentleman from the East Coast as well, Paulo do Forno. We will also have our song of the week. We'll have our poem of the week, and we will also have Portuguese community news and some final comments. All that coming up in the next 20-some minutes here on the Portuguese American Hour every week, 4 to 5 on KGST Multicultural 1600 and produced by the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at the California State University in Fresno. So we will be right back.
Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community. Listen Wednesdays from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
And we are back with our last segment of the Portuguese American Hour, the last 20 minutes. Thank you all for joining us and keep on joining us until 5 p.m. The Portuguese American Hour is a product of the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at the California State University, Fresno. We are going directly to our recipe of the week. We have on the line our good friend and colleague on the Portuguese American Leadership Council of the United States Board of Directors, PALCAS Board of Directors, Paulo do Forno, who is joining us from the East Coast and who is going to give us a recipe that many of you in the Portuguese American community here locally who are can trace your roots to the Azores do not know much about. So take your pen and pencil, and of course we'll have this out, and actually there are many other ways that we'll get it to you, but the pen and pencil is good right now and a piece of paper for us to talk about a unique recipe. Paul, first of all, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome.
Thanks. I'm excited to be here and share about the north of the mainland.
That's
Portugal,
right. That's right. Trás-os-Montes. So tell us a little bit about this this recipe, and not just this recipe, but a little bit about this tradition.
Sure. So this recipe is about foulade, and it's foulade of the type of Transmontano. And from that area, it's not a sweet bread. So that's probably what might be most known, some sweet breads out there. But this is a typical type of bread that is made during the Easter season, and its history traces back to this was something that was celebrated after breaking the feast just before Easter. As the priests would walk around, this would be a gift to the priests as they blessed the house, and it was also a traditional gift of godfathers that gave to their godsons and goddaughters. And so this area that I'm from, this is a unique foulard type. It's from a little village and actually city, Valpaço, in the north of Portugal, only 30 miles from the northern Spanish border. It's a typical of all Transmontano, but what Valpaço has done, and from its all the little villages around, they actually now have a festival, which is Palm Sunday every year. For the last 25 years, they've had this Feira do Foulard. And so I grew up with this and thought this was just the normal Portuguese food, and come to understand in different regions, it's very different.
Mm-hmm.
So here in Valpaço and in Trás-os-Montes, the foulard, or this bread, is kind of a yellowish type of egg-based bread dough, but is stuffed with chorizo and with cuts of sometimes like ends of bacon. And so you get a little bit of the fatty taste, and sometimes even traditionally lard, pieces of lard for taste and for to keep it a little wet inside. And so this is a traditional Easter, but now it's become like known. In fact, the city that I'm from, they got the European Union to designate it as the Foulard Capital of Europe.
And
fantastic.
They got
it. Yes. So that's the background.
Okay. And what goes in this foulard? Because as you said, that it's intriguing to those of us who are from the Azores, because we traditionally put foulard with something that's sweet. And in this case, it's not.
It's not. So, you know, the way they make it, and it's, you know, you start off with, and this is, you know, just one recipe. You start off, basically, you mix up all of the wet ingredients, and you start off, and, you know, and I'm going to be clear. I'm not a wonderful cook, but after you've had this made by your parents, your mom, and your family, you miss this, so you have to try to make this. So I did find the recipe, and I've learned to make it. And so you start off with 12 eggs, and you beat it until it's well mixed. Then separately, you want to, and this is probably the hardest part, is you want to create a yeast that also helps to, you know, create it to rise. And that's really the hardest part. So you want to, you know, warm cup of water mixed with a tablespoon of salt, a stick of butter, and then a half a cup of olive oil, in which, you know, jokingly, I'm friends with the mayor in Valpaço, and he's called me the ambassador of foulard. He said, you got to use the olive oil from Trás-os-Montes and Valpaço to make the difference. That's the different taste. So we have a half a cup of olive oil from Valpaço, and you mix that all together and let it sit. Don't let the yeast get too hot. You need to melt down the butter. So you have the eggs, you mix it with this, you let the yeast mix with a stick of butter and with the olive oil, and then mix those two together and let it sit for a little bit. And then sift 10 cups of flour, and the yeast that you put in, it's either, you know, your favorite three packages of dry yeast or a couple cup cubes of fresh yeast they're used to doing for some bread. And so you let that sit, and then you mix that. And now what the traditional ways would do, and in the villages, they would have what these wooden little beet areas. They would make these massive things. And on Easter Sunday, they would just beat these massive areas in this wood. But these ingredients fit perfectly into a mixer. So if you have, you know, one of those classic KitchenAid mixers, this will fit exactly in. And so you let it get mixed for about 15 minutes, and that'll mix it all up and get it to, you know, pretty fluffy. As soon as you see it to stick, you bring it out, and you knead it. You knead it down enough so that, you know, you got all the air out and it's okay. And then you let it sit for about 15 minutes. and let it, you know, beat it again. And then for, you probably let it then sit and rise until it gets to be about double the size, and let it, rise with the yeast, et cetera. And then after that, you kind of grease the outside and put some layout and knead out all of the dough. Mm-hmm. And then that's when you put in the chorizo, the slice of chorizos, the slice of ham, the slice of, you know, little bits of fat on the ham. Mm-hmm. You lay that out, and then you roll it up into a couple. This will make two good size rectangular loaves.
Mm-hmm.
And after you get that rolled up, that's when you then let it sit for a couple hours.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, you put it in, you know, preheat your oven to about 400 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be plus or minus something depending, but you let it cook there for 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then lower it down to 350, and then let it cook for another 15 minutes, and then bring it out and let it sit for 15 minutes, and then it should be ready.
Fantastic. Wow. I wish I had some right now. That sounds really, really, really good. Well, that is Fular from Trás-os-Montes, Valpaços. Again, Paul, thank you so much for sharing this with us, for sharing the history, the ingredients, the recipe itself. And I know that we'll have some access to this online for if folks want to, if they didn't jot this down. Okay? Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Sounds good.
Thank you so much. Thank you. And that was Paul do Forno with our recipe of the week.
American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community. Listen Wednesdays from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
Oh, Laurindinha, vem à janela. Oh, Laurindinha, vem à janela. Ver o teu amor, ai, 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 que ele vai para a guerra. Ver o teu amor, ai, 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 que ele vai para a guerra.
And that's Laurindinha, our song of the week by Dulce Pontes. Dulce Pontes is a pretty well-known Portuguese singer. Laurindinha is a very typical song. It was very, very popular throughout the last century and even into this century. It is part of the Portuguese folk music, part of the Portuguese popular songs that have been part of the musical world in Portugal, in the Azores, in Madeira, in everything that belongs to Portugal for many, many decades. Let's listen a little bit more of Dulce Pontes and Laurindinha. And after Laurindinha, we will be going to our poem of the week in just a little bit. Our poem of the week is the next segment, and then some community news here on the Portuguese American Hour, a product of the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute. Every weekday, as far as Wednesdays are concerned, we are here from 4 to 5 p.m. And our poem of the week is going to be from a gentleman who many people in the Portuguese American community have some information and know him, which is Art Coelho. Art was born and raised here in the Valley. He went to the schools in the Riverdale area in Kings County, and he now lives in Montana. And his poem is God Bless the Azorean Immigrant. From Art Coelho, God bless the Azorean immigrants. God bless the Azorean immigrants who leave behind their black lava shores. Their courage must match their vision when they arrive at Ellis Island's doors. It's the same old desperate story. Borrow the passageway, go into debt to finally be free. Milk those cows, stack that hay, and put more pride into the family tree. My grandmother, Maria Cordeiro, wasn't afraid to speak at first when she told her mama of her American dream. But when a hard wooden shoe came flying across the room directly at her, it was all she could do to jump and scream. She kept a long secret silence with her mother, and she convinced her father to buy her tickets on that great boat across the Atlantic Ocean. He understood the dream in her heart. This dream was much more than a mere childhood notion. Oh, we put our nose to the grindstone so our children would share the gifts of our truths. And now our offspring are pillars of a community with strong and lasting Portuguese roots. And we will continue with the Portuguese American Hour now in our final moments to talk to you a little bit about some of the upcoming events. And so, lots of events coming up. We just have about 3 minutes. We will try to crunch them all in. So, this coming Saturday, Saudade do Bravo, a folklore group in Tulare from the Portuguese Cultural Center, CPEC, will be having a traditional dinner, torresmos, marinated pork, and other Azorean delicacies. It's at the TDES Hall, starting at 7 o'clock. Tickets are still available. Contact any member of the folklore group Saudade do Bravo. The Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at Fresno State will be having its next lecture on the 7th of November at 6 p.m. in the Peters Building Auditorium. Ag Auditorium this time, the Agricultural Department, Ag 106, the Ag Lecture Hall at 6 o'clock. The title of the talk is Angra and the World. It is a lecture by Alamo Menezes, who is the mayor of the city of Angra, and he'll be talking about the era of the discoveries and lots of other information that I know all Azoreans from all islands and those who are of Azorean backgrounds will want to listen. It's free of charge, and it's at 6 p.m. in the Agriculture Lecture Hall. November the 9th, the Portuguese Band Festival that we talked about with our guest Manuel Correia. Also, on November the 15th in Turlock, the Portuguese Education Foundation of Central California will be hosting its annual scholarship dinner and also honoring lots of people in the community. And put down on your calendar, December 5th will be our last lecture for this semester of the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at Fresno State. It is with a poet from the city of Los Banos, a Portuguese-American named Sam Pereira. That one will be at the Peters Building 191 Auditorium, and again at 6 o'clock. But before that, again, do put down your calendar next week on Thursday, so a week from tomorrow, the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute lecture will be with Alamo Menezes, who is the mayor of the city of Angra. It is at 6 o'clock. It is free of charge. Everyone is welcome, and there will be obviously lots of information there that I think is important for those of us who are of Portuguese background or those of us who are not of Portuguese background but would like to learn a little bit more about the Azores and its relationship with our valley. And this is about the end of the Portuguese American Hour. I thank Esmeralda for being on the board, and we thank you all for listening to another episode of the Portuguese American Hour here on KGHT Multicultural 1600. We'll be back again next Wednesday at 4 p.m. with another edition of the Portuguese American Hour. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next week.
Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community. Listen Wednesdays from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
This was a special program on Multicultural 1600 AM.